Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. It's also the New Year's Eve edition of the Three Martini Lunch, a special year-end awards edition. It's our second to last, so the awards get more and more prestigious as we go along here. As we count down to midnight, we've got champagne on ice over there in the corner, some party hats, the piano guy who's going to come in and play Auld Lang Syne will be here any minute. So, Jim, let's talk today about the most underreported story of the year, most overreported story of the year, and the best story of the year. When it comes to underreported, there's a lot of different ones that came to mind, certainly ones that would be beneficial to conservative arguments on a number of issues. One that quickly came to mind was just how little the networks covered the midterm elections, because the polls never looked that great for Democrats. But the one I'm going to go with is the coverage of Jonathan Gruber. He's already my most honest political figure of the year, but this is a story that the networks vigorously ignored when a key architect, no matter what he said at that hearing, basically said time after time after time in speeches ever since the bill was passed that there was a lack of transparency on purpose, so the people that know there was a tax, that younger, healthier people are going to be paying for the health care for older, less healthy people, that it was just kind of a shell game and a charade all the way around. And if this had been a Republican policy, it would have been wall-to-wall all day long. And even when he finally came clean to some extent, the media just didn't care. They didn't cover the speeches when they happened. They didn't cover it when the videos came out. And they pretty much ignored the hearings because it was the same day the CIA torture report came out. So underreported, Jonathan Gruber fessing up unintentionally in all those videos.
That's a really good choice. I do kind of fascinate by the lack of interest in how media managed to justify, like, a top, you know, White House advisor saying the voters are stupid. Like, it just, for some reason, they just couldn't find anything interesting in that, which I think is kind of, it says so much about them that they, that's a real triumph of partisanship if you can't find anything interesting or surprising or shocking or anything like that. The underreported story of the year, I kind of wimped out and couldn't come up with one, but I kind of have a general theme,
sure,
Greg, and that is any foreign policy problem or threat beyond the moment of crisis.
Mm.
Because there were a lot of foreign policy stories that got about a week or two of really big coverage, and then they disappeared. I mean, as far as if you trusted the nightly news or the front page of the newspaper, you might think things are cool between Russia and Ukraine. That story just disappeared right after the initial provocation or the, you know, remember the shoot down of the passenger airliner? It was a huge story for about 4 days.
Yep.
And we declared we were outraged. We instituted a couple of new sanctions, and then gone, you know, forgot about it. ISIS seemed to come out of nowhere, but they didn't really come out of nowhere. They were building threat for a long time. And then, you know, they'll dominate the news headlines for a week or two, and then that disappears. Israel and Gaza, you know, really huge story there. Boko Haram and the kidnapped girls. We keep having these, like, mini, you know, foreign crises that don't really get resolved. They don't really get fixed. It just kind of fades from the news and gets replaced by another one. And so I guess to paraphrase Andy Warhol, in the future, every foreign policy crisis will be famous for 15 minutes.
Mm.
So that's kind of my general sense that I wish the press could do a better job of follow-up and a little bit less of – it reminds me of, you know, kids playing soccer where they all chase the ball at the same time. You're like, spread out. And they clump together.
Yep.
This is, you know, a bad habit of the media, and I don't see it changing anytime soon.
Excellent choice. That was definitely true all the way throughout 2014. Overreported story. Not really a political story. CNN probably gets the lead on this award this year. The Malaysian Air mystery. The plane that
just... The one foreign policy story they never lost interest in.
That's right. They basically tricked out their studios for this all these different scenarios that could have happened. They went wall to wall for days and weeks and weeks. And, you know, it's one of those stories that you got to figure, you know, there is an outside chance we might not actually lock in on a physical location of this thing. There's a huge body of water out there. They just would not let it go. The other networks spent a ton of time on this as well. Obviously, it's tragic for the families of those on board who lost their loved ones. But the incessant, nonstop coverage of this story, when all these other stories you just talked about that were underreported or not followed up on got ignored after a number of days, this one just would not go away, and in proportion, just didn't make sense.
Didn't at one point, was it Don Lemon, I want to say, who seems like a nice enough guy, even when he says something that's completely out of left field. wasn't he speculating a Stargate or teleportation portal or time travel or something?
It was certainly out there.
Somebody had said something like that, and I'm kind of just, you know, I was like, now, like on the one hand, you could say, oh, it's sensationalism and kind of nubbiness. But you got to admit, like, you know, hey, Don Lemon's speculating about a Stargate. So vacuuming up it. Turn on the TV. You're going to want to see this. You know, that's kind of a groundbreaking television, you could kind of say for that. A fine choice, Greg. I went again with kind of a genre of story for overreported for this year. But Lord knows there certainly were plenty of them in 2014. And it was very tough to pick just one. Greg, I'm gonna shock you. So I hope you're sitting down. You may want to have smelling salts or something pillow to fall upon. Did you know that people say controversial things on the internet?
No.
Yes, and they do. And apparently, sometimes it happens, and it is the most important story in the entire world. You know, we've got to get this person fired because they said something absolutely controversial and terrible. You know. They had no trigger warning on their Twitter feed, you know. There was no content label on their Facebook post, you know. How dare they? And we saw it, you know, in previous years, Brendan Eich over at Mozilla. I think probably the most spectacular example of it this year was Elizabeth Lawton, that communications director for Congressman Stephen Fincher. You know, she wrote some kind of, you know, snippy, snarky things about the Obama daughters. And, you know, we could argue whether that's unwise or whether the Obama daughters ought to be off limits. But then she had to be fired, you know. You have no place in the public square. You know, like, I'm just kind of struck by this. And my only possible explanation I come up with is this. It's a variation of the millennial, you know, special little snowflake theory. In that you get a participation trophy for everything. You kind of walk through life believing you should not encounter things that offend you. Whereas if you're a conservative, you get offended like 12 times before breakfast. Okay? Like it's just part of life. People are going to say things you don't like. You just suck it up. You know, you just deal with it. You know, you live in a country with the First Amendment, and they're going to, you know, any day you don't see a crucifix in urine, it's a pretty good day, you know, in terms of having your values insulted and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, we got to get rid of the Washington Redskins and you know, this rape denialist. And it's like one, you know, spectacular outrage after another, very often because someone wrote something I disagree with and people literally can't handle it and stuff. So I think overreported story of 2014 were the outrage du jour and these online mobs demanding somebody get fired because they wrote something they disagree with.
And sadly, they usually got it. All right, on to the best story of the year. Put me in the boring corner, but it is the biggest and best political story of the year for conservatives. The results of the midterm elections. It was thought that perhaps in 2010, even being a 60-40 split, that the conditions were favorable enough for Republicans to somehow get the majority. They gained six seats that year. That was pretty good. 2012, it was almost a given among Republican activists, conservatives, that they'd get the majority. Didn't happen. Actually gave back two seats. This year, the odds very much again in Republicans' favor. And this time, it actually happened. Not only getting the majority, but picking up nine seats to 54-45. So there's a cushion there. To get a lot of stuff passed. The House has the most Republicans in over 80 years. And no matter what the media tried to do by ignoring the stories or playing up faux controversies among some of the candidates in the more competitive races, it just didn't work. Obama was too unpopular. The Republicans, for the most part, recruited very solid candidates who didn't stumble very much on the campaign trail. And in the end, all those factors, plus the six-year itch, the midterm of the president's second term, came together. Republican turnout much more motivated, and a lot of these races that were thought to be close were not close at all. And of course, when that happens, you get some extra wins that you didn't even really expect. So great midterm results, and now it's time, obviously, for those majorities to get to work. And but 2014 at the midterms couldn't have gone much better.
I am in great agreement there. I went with a slightly different one. I debated this one being the whether it should be the underreported story. I decided to make the best story of the year, going in kind of different direction in the realm of just American social life. The divorce rate is going down. There's this oft-quoted statistic that half of all marriages end in divorce. It pops up in, you know, romantic comedy movies and things like that. And once you adjust for the length of time of someone being married, the divorce rate is going down, and some have calculated it's down to a third, some calculate it's down even lower than that. What it seems like is, look, you know, late 60s, 70s, and 80s, no-fault divorce laws become widespread throughout the country. And the baby boomer generation was the first one to have divorce being really easy. And you saw a lot of divorces and broken families back then. And it was a circumstance of all of a sudden people had the option of walking away from their marriages, and in some cases walking away from their kids if they... I think a lot of bad effects for kids across the country. Generation X saw that experience and kind of, you know, decided they didn't want to go through that experience themselves. They didn't want to put their kids through it. And it seems like more people are trying to stick it out and trying to make it work. And I think that's a really fantastic benefit. Now, some argue this is also a reflection of rising rates of cohabitation. People live together before they get married. Maybe they kind of figure out whether they're a good match or not. Different people are going to have different perspectives about whether that's a good idea. But I do think that we have a broader cultural recognition of the consequences of divorce, the consequences for children, and the idea that even if it's hard, even if it's not always easy, marriage is something that really warrants a full commitment and every little bit of effort you can. And I think that there's a really good sign in that, and a sign that not all social indicators of a healthy society are going in the wrong direction. Sometimes things go in the right direction too.
Definitely a positive sign in a culture that still has a myriad of problems. And one other thing I would just add to that, most economists, certainly ones on the right, would point to a stable marriage as the number one ingredient to ward off poverty. And so that's definitely a sign in the right direction, too, given how many people are currently in a condition of poverty. So, Jim, we'll stop there on that good news. Ring in the new year and take off tomorrow for New Year's Day. Enjoy the college football. And we'll reconvene on Friday for our biggest awards of the year.
Greg, I'll see you next year.
Sounds good. He's Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Happy New Year, everyone. We'll see you on Friday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.